thing that puzzled me a bit was, well, I suppose it's a fundamental question, really. Why wasn't she a militant?
Well, she was a pacifist all her life, and she strongly disapproved of violence. She was a pacifist during the First World War, not during the Second, although she didn't like it much, but she did, a good many people changed their minds in that war, I think.
Yes.
But that was the main reason.
Yes. But, because, as you know, the WSPU was very, I mean, had a strong following from mill girls and people like that.
Mm.
And one might have thought that the milieu she came from, she would naturally move into the WSPU instead of into the NUWSS. But she, that's one reason why she's so interesting, I think, that she doesn't make that move, and I wondered quite why. I suppose it's just this very deeply rooted aversion to violence as such.
I think it was, yes.
Mm.
I don't remember just what her first contact with the National Union was, or even exactly when she joined it, because you know what it's like when you're a child, you accept and you don't notice beginnings and ends, well,
yes.
Ends maybe, but not beginnings.
Yes.
But I always understood from her, and she has various letters in the Rochdale Observer, which I've read, which are very critical of the militants and their attitude to violence.
They're in here somewhere. Oh yes, you've got some here. Perhaps I ought to look at those, wouldn't I? You think they'd be worth looking up, do you? I mean, for her views about that.
Yes, I'm not sure if I have actually quoted those particular ones.
Mm. They certainly
but I could find them.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, that would be very interesting. I think I'd better make a note of that. But where did she get this sort of pacifism from, really, do you think?
I don't know, because again I accepted it, you see,
mm.
as being an integral part of my mother.
Mm.
My father wasn't a pacifist in the same way.
Mm. I mean, you say she's a vegetarian as well as a pacifist.
Yes, but she was a vegetarian largely because she couldn't bear the idea of eating anything alive. It wasn't so much a matter of principle as of distaste.
Sort of humanitarian.
Yes.
Yeah.
She just didn't like the thought of it, you see. She wouldn't eat fish. She did eat eggs and butter, but no fish, no meat of any kind, and I don't remember her ever doing so.
Mm.
But just when she started that, it can't have been as a child or a young woman, obviously. Well, not while she was living at home.
Mm. You see, I was wondering whether it all tends to go together with teetotalism, for instance, and with normal.
Well, she wasn't a teetotaler.
Wasn't she?
No, she didn't drink much. After all, we couldn't afford a lot anyway. And my father was a teetotaler, but mother wasn't.
Was she a nonconformist, actually? I didn't gather...
She was brought up as a nonconformist, but my father was too, but he reacted violently against it. My mother didn't. She just drifted away from it, I think. And they were both agnostics all the time I knew them.
Mm. So she might have sort of picked up a general complex of humanitarian ideas from her background, but she'd shed the background, so to speak.
Yes, I doubt it, because as far as I know, her brothers had none of these ideas.
Mm.
They were special to her.
That's interesting, yes. What?
And I'm sorry, you see, all this happened when I was either not born or too young
of
to
course.
Pay any attention.
Yes. Could you remind me, actually, Miss Chu, how old your mother was when you were born?
She was 28.
Yes, I see. Mm. So you really know about her life from that time on?
Yes. And the rest is just hearsay or
yes,
reading, you
I
see.
Understand, yes. Yes. But you did actually go around with her.
Yes, I did, till I was 7. Mm. See, she had strong ideas in other directions. One of them was about children's education. Again, I have no idea where she started it. But she didn't think children should go early to school, so she kept me away till I was 7. How she managed that, I don't quite know. And then only sent me half days till I was 12. And she couldn't bear to leave me at home. So I just went round with her. But my memories of that are very, very spasmodic and erratic.
Did she combine the idea of your not going to school with educating you herself?
Not particularly, no. Mm. All the education I got at home was from conversation. And having the books read to me, which happened all my life, you see.
Mm.
And I was surrounded by books. Both my parents were very fond of reading.
Mm.
But I had no formal education whatever till I went to school. and then we just went ahead.
Yes, I mean, that in a way vindicates her, doesn't it, I suppose, because you did well once you got there.
Oh, yes, and enjoyed it thoroughly, yes.
Yes, yes. You say you had lots of books. What sort of books at home, then? I mean, books about politics, novels, what sort of things?
Yes, all of them. Mm. Everything except poetry. I liked poetry, but my parents didn't.
Mm.
But we had everything else. And, of course, we borrowed an awful lot from the library.
Did you? Yes.
Yes. My mother was extremely fond of reading novels. If she couldn't get part of any day for reading a novel, she got thoroughly bad tempered. It was her chief recreation, I think.
Yes. What sort of novels? Sort of classic novels or any novels, really? Just
oh, any novels, yes. Yes. Mm. Just fiction.
So can you remember anything about going round with her? It must have been a rather remarkable childhood if you went round with her giving while she was speaking and so on.
Yes, well, again, you see, it was up to the age of seven.
Mm.
And you know how scattered one's memories are. Mm. Mine are mainly of various children I met and occasionally of something like a toy theatre that I envied very much. Because she left me behind when she was going round to her meetings.
Did she?
Yes, I didn't go round.
I see.
People entertained her and kept me entertained at the same time.
Yes, I see. Yes.
So that I have very... no memories that are really of any use in her career.
What about your father? Did he looked after himself while she went on her tours? They were both in the movement, of course, weren't they?
Yes, but he was... Well, he had his own business by that time.
Mm.
And he was... he didn't go around much. He had at one time been an ILP organiser, but I don't think he liked it very much.
Mm.
And his talents didn't lie in that direction. And what work he did and his activities were more local, confined to Rochdale.
Mm. Another puzzle, I mean, purely from an outsider's point of view, reading your original memoir, which I mean, it's really in a sense of asking you about the whole of her later life, which you must know a lot about. The first half of her life is of great historical importance in the labour movement, but then she becomes an employer and seems to move completely out of that world, and you have very much less on her later life than on the earlier life. And I wondered what happened exactly, why she moved out of the labour movement. I think you have a brief sentence here, something about she became disillusioned with party politics.
Yes.
And I wondered quite how you explain that great transition in her life, really.
Well, the war made all the difference, you see.
Mm.
The war came and it practically stopped all the things she'd been engaged in.
Mm.
And engaged in full time. And she didn't like the war. She wasn't prepared to go in any sort of war activity. And also, that time, there were not the pensions, the state pensions and social security that there is now, and she began to feel the need of supplementing the income, my father's income, and saving up money for the future, you see. And I think, quite honestly, that was the, first of all, the abrupt ending. And then she didn't go back into it because she had become involved in business, and she was, by that time, about 50. She hadn't very much time left. And so she was very anxious to earn as much money as she could until she retired at the age of 60.
I understand, yes. Mm. Yes. And anyway, in a sense, I suppose she could have said, well, the labour movement's on its feet now.
Well, yeah. She could, yes.
Mm.
But she hadn't been... See, I'm trying to think. I remember going to a labour conference at Bradford in 1911. I don't think either of my parents were very much involved after about 1912 or 13. One reason, I think, was again disillusionment with the attitude of the Labour Party during the war. That is, as far as my mother was concerned, my father's attitude was somewhat different. He was more locally disillusioned. I don't think I need go into that.
No.
But in her case, I think it was a sort of general disillusionment with...
Simply the Labour Party doesn't align itself behind the pacifists
as
it should have done. Yes. Did she admire Ramsay MacDonald, actually?
No. Not in later years, anyway.
Oh, not later years. No. I really wondered at that time, because he was a pacifist.
I can't remember her talking about it very much.
Yes, yes. Anyway, that does help to clear that. I mean, I hadn't connected the disillusion with the pacifism point. Of course, that probably is a largely...
I don't think it was entirely that. After all, you can't be connected with any movement without becoming disillusioned by some of the people in it, can you?
Of course, yes. She was never in any sense, I suppose, a careerist in it, whereas there were many careerists in the
Labour. No, she was never a careerist.
No. Well, another thing which puzzled me, really, what you said, actually, it's rather odd that a woman who was so active in public speaking and so outward-going in a way, as she obviously was, should be, as you say, reserved.
Yes, she was a curious combination in that way. She was very reserved. I think it was true in the Labour movement. It certainly was in the suffrage movement. And I think it was due partly to the fact that the majority of the women she worked with in the suffrage movement were of a different class. And you know that class mattered a lot more then than it does now. And they had a different upbringing, she had no formal education, as you know. And although she liked them very much and she respected them, she always felt that they regarded her as being... Well, I don't know how to put it without making them sound snobbish, which they really weren't, but on a different level, because they came from a different milieu altogether. And she always held herself rather aloof from them for that reason.
Yes, I see. She wasn't personally reserved then,
She was, yes, except with people she knew quite well. She wasn't really I know she sounds like an extrovert, but she wasn't really. She was much more of an introvert with this ability to speak and project herself. I suppose it's possible to have these two sides of oneself.
Oh, yes, yes. It's just not an obvious combination, I quite agree it can be possible. And one way of, in fact, overcoming your nervousness is in fact
to go out.
Yes. One thing does interest me with all the suffragettes, not just your mother, is how they manage their home life. I mean, because obviously it's very difficult to run the two together, one would expect anyway somebody very concerned about the rights of women and so on to have views about the household and family and that sort of thing. What was she like as a mother, really, in her attitude to you as a child? I mean, is that a fair question to ask you?
Well, you couldn't have had a better one. We were very, very close all our lives. And she had to go away from time to time. And I've always been on the defensive, because all my life people have said, yes, well, women shouldn't leave the home while they have children. They always ought to be there. The children should be there. Even if they work, they must be there when the children are there. Well, my mother went away for quite long periods. And I thought I became more independent as a result of that. And it certainly didn't in any way affect our relationship.
No. And anyway, she took you with her
Till I was seven, yes.
Yeah.
But in later years, you see, after I was about 10, she used to go away for periods. And we wrote to each other and so on. We had to have domestic help, of course, during that time. But I can't remember ever feeling deprived or anything, but rather proud that I had somebody with so many interests. And as I say, I've always been defending the woman who works and who goes away to work for that reason. Whereas I believe most firmly that what matters is your relationship, not whether you're there all the time.
I quite agree with that. But it must have also made her a much more interesting mother in a way.
It did, because she had things to talk about, you see, when she came back.
Of course, yeah.
And it also meant that we had interesting people coming to our house. And it was an education just to sit and listen to them, something you absorbed without knowing you were absorbing it.
Yes, I've often had that said to me by other children.
Have you?
People active, yes. Mm. Yes, mm. I mean, it's a great gift, that, in a way, to a child, isn't it?
It is.
But it's only a gift if they're prepared to talk to you, as not exactly as an adult, but at least not in patronising terms. Did she talk to you really almost on a level, so to speak?
Oh, yes.
And you felt you could join in?
Yes.
Discussion.
I didn't much as a small child because it was above my head. But I was never told to be quiet or not say anything or anything like that. I remember once, you know, both my parents belonged to the one of the first WEA classes that was ever held. My R.H. Tawney. And I cannot remember the circumstances exactly, but I know I used to go sometimes, not to the class, of course, but some of the odd meetings that they had. And I must have been there without my parents. I can't imagine why. I was about 11. And I think a discussion arose on this very subject that you've raised, the question of working mothers. And perhaps it was the first time it turned up in my life. And I found myself embarking on a speech defending working mothers, you see, which startled everybody very much. And when my mother heard about it, she was really rather upset. She wondered if I'd been pushing myself forward till the other people said, no, it was all right, you see. They hadn't minded it, so to speak. And in that way, she was anxious that I shouldn't be in any way pushed forward. But I was never held back, and I was always given a full share. I mean, I started reading The Guardian, for instance, soon as I could read, you know. I've read it all my life without knowing when I began. And I was allowed to join in the conversation when it seemed suitable.
Did she guide you towards particular books or...?
No, she didn't believe in that. She believed in setting you free among books and letting you find your own.
But of course you had ever so many round the world.
Oh yes, we had plenty, and we had a very good library. I remember being taken to it before I could reach the counter. Because in those days you didn't wander among the shelves, you know. You had to ask for books. And I had books bought for me. All sorts of fairy stories which have gone out now, which used to appear in penny numbers, you know. And anything that I showed an interest in was procured for me right away, as far as income allowed.
She had a attitude, a sort of distinctive attitude to education. Apart from just sort of not wanting you to go to school all the time as a young child, did she?
I mean, no, she, she wanted you, both my parents wanted their child to have all the education they hadn't had, you see. But mother had theories about not being pushed, being held back, which were occasionally a bit embarrassing to me.
You mean she didn't want you to be overstrained?
No, and... I remember there was one, it was rather a silly exam we used to take in school in those days, called Junior Oxford. And she wouldn't let me go in for it. And of course it was one of those you could have taken in your stride, you see. I'd much rather have been allowed to take it with everybody else. And on another occasion, she was rather a thorn in the flesh for the headmaster, I remember, because of her theories. Another occasion, she thought it was a good idea to involve children in education in public affairs. And one of her methods was by taking me to the Midlothian by-election for a week, which wasn't really very satisfactory to the headmaster.
Took away from school,
oh,
mean?
Yes. She could do it, of course, because the school leaving age was much lower then, and I'd already passed it. Yes. And it made no difference. I mean, I was a reasonably bright child, you know, I could fill it up all right.
It's a very imaginative thing. I mean, there's no better way to understand politics than actually be involved in
no,
the election of the
No, you grow up in it, yes, yeah. Quite yeah. True.
That's very interesting. What about work about the house and that sort of thing? I mean, was she a good housekeeper, would you say?
Oh, very. After all, she'd been brought up from the age of heaven knows what to look after babies and to, not that she did much of that, she saw to that afterwards, and cooking, baking, washing. No, she had definite theories about housework. I don't know whether you've ever heard of Mrs. Charlotte Perkins Gilman.
Yes, I have.
She once came to Rochdale, and I have one of her books still, Well, Mother was very keen on her because she had ideas about cooperation and housekeeping. And she thought that would be the way things should develop. And of course they haven't, they've developed technologically. And I don't think anybody nowadays realizes how hard housework was in those days. Real hard work.
But how did she envisage then things developing? I mean, did she try and establish cooperative arrangements?
Oh no, she did nothing practical about it. Mm. She just thought that that would be the best way, that it would develop in that way as more women went out to work, you see.
Mm. So that you'd have communal child rearing and communal cooking.
Well, I don't know if she went as far as child rearing, but certainly cooking and washing and so on.
Mm. But in the intermediate period, that is, while she was alive, she cooked and washed as well as anybody else, did she?
Mm. All the time she was at home, and when she was in the house, she was working. And, of course, as soon as new methods came in, she adopted them. I think we had one of the first washers and one of the first fridges in the neighbourhood.
That's very interesting, yes. And did she saw machinery as a sort of emancipating in a way, which of course it has been to some extent, hasn't it?
Yes.
But, I mean, obviously you've got to strike a balance, haven't you? I mean, you must know this yourself, and my wife knows it. I mean, if you want to actually do anything as a professional woman, or as a businesswoman in her case, you've got to compromise, haven't you, on that question?
Yes.
Did she have difficulty in compromising in that way, in your recollection?
Difficult for me to say.
I mean, you've just got to say, well, you know, I'll do the radiators once a week instead of every day or something, dust them, you know, or I'll take the books out every other year.
Well,
year.
If you mean, was she house proud? No.
Mm.
Definitely not. The house would take second place.
Yes.
Clean, yes, but as far as dusting and so on was concerned, that could always wait.
Yes. And about sort of dress and things like that, I mean, she must have had theories about dress as well, didn't she?
No, she had no dress sense whatsoever.
Mm.
Absolutely none. And there's rather a pathetic letter somewhere in the Common Cause suggesting that they should publish articles advising suffragists who didn't know how to dress. And I remember she quoted one man who'd said, you can always tell a suffragist by the way she dresses. Look at Mrs. Chu, she never has her hat on straight. Pity that she had to wear a hat in those days. It wouldn't have mattered now.
Well, I mean, of course, not having any dress sense is quite compatible with having theories about dress, isn't it?
Well, she didn't have any particular theories.
Didn't she? I see. Yes, because she did have theories about quite a lot of things, didn't she? I mean, you would have thought it might have extended to that. I mean, one would have thought she might have said, well, why on earth should women wear these absurd hats or whatever? You know, we want to be able to move around as men do, and that sort of attitude to dress.
No.
But she didn't.
No. I don't think she thought it was important enough.
Mm. Mm. What about gardening? I mean, there are several suffragettes I could name who were very keen gardeners.
No.
Was she sort of outdoor in any way, would you say?
Not from her childhood, no.
Mm.
She liked going around and seeing the countryside. But I don't think she'd ever had time in her life to bother about gardening, you know. And also she was a farmer's daughter, and farmers aren't much interested in gardens.
Fair enough. I mean, there's not that sort of romantic idea about the soil, so to speak. Yes, that's a point. Yes. What did she do with her spare time? I mean, if she had any, in your recollection, that would be sort of from the age of 30 on, well, I suppose 35 onwards, wouldn't it? And that sort of, what were her tastes in recreation?
All I can say is reading.
Mm.
I don't think there was anything else special.
Mm.
She had no physical recreation. In any case, she lived too physically demanding a life generally, I think, to feel the need of it. You know, she travelled an awful lot. And when you think everything had to be done on a train, and under disabilities that women don't suffer from nowadays, and she always liked travel. I mean, she had to do it, but as soon as she became able to do it for leisure, she liked doing that very much. But she didn't have the opportunities that people have nowadays, of course. Mm. Most of her travel was for work. But the only thing I remember her being passionate about was reading.
And she just sort of shut herself up, would she, for part of the day and just say, well, you know, I'm going to get some reading down or something.
Yeah. Oh, she just sat down with a book and that was there.
Yeah.
I think I've never known her more. At the time when she really worked hardest was in her 50s, when she was running this mail order business. And she used to work about 16 hours a day.
Did she?
Typing when she was at home, typewriter never seemed to stop, and of course working all day in her warehouse. That was when she got most irritated, I think, because she couldn't read. Because one advantage of train journeys is you can read.
Yes, that's when I do my reading.
Yes.
But why did she establish this business? I'm afraid I've forgotten quite when your father died.
He died in 1940.
I see, but she'd already started that before then.
Oh, she started in 1920.
Yes, yes.
And she stopped in 1930. Mm. She came 60 in that year, and she definitely stopped. But my father didn't. He came to live here, but he stayed sometimes in Manchester. Mm. And he ran his business.
But they ran this business together, did they? I mean,
not then, no. Not, oh. They did it first, and then they more or less split. He concentrated on shoes and slippers and she on drapery, you see. And they were two separate businesses in the last 10 years.
Were they really? I see, yes. And that must have, well, I don't know, was that a pioneering thing, the mail order business at that time? Probably not, I suppose, was it? It was just
I don't think
quite it. Common for mail order firms to exist at that time, wasn't it, I think?
I think so. I don't get the idea. I haven't the idea that Mother thought she was doing anything very much out of the way when she started it.
Although, as a woman, she might have been doing something.
Well, that could be. But it developed out of the retail drapery that she was already involved in. Mm. And I don't know why she said. You see, at that time, I was either at college or going to my first job, and I was rather absorbed in my own affairs. I must have heard her discuss it, but why she decided to turn, I think it was simply, I mean, what gave her the idea, I don't know. The reason why she decided to turn a retail into a wholesale mail order was, I'm quite sure, that she thought there was more to be made out of it.
Yes.
Particularly at that particular time, just after the war. And most of her customers were shopkeepers in remote country districts who couldn't get anything close at hand. And therefore were obliged.
So she was a sort of wholesaler, really.
Yeah,
wasn't
she? She was a wholesaler.
I see. Yes.
Yes.
But did she need to earn the money, so to speak? I mean, was your father's income not large enough to keep you all three of you, or was it just that she wanted to try her hand, do you think, at running a business of this sort? Rather difficult.
Well, of course, by that time I was practically independent. It wasn't a question of keeping me.
Mm.
I think, I don't know really whether I can explain the relationship between my father and mother in that way.
Mm.
And my father always accepted the fact that my mother would be independent and would earn money independently. And I think the only time of her life when she didn't was when I was born and for about a couple of years afterwards. So he accepted that. Now he had also been brought up in a Lancashire working class family. I don't know whether you know anything about them, particularly at that period, because his idea was quite definitely that you gave your wife so much money every week and she managed on it, you see. Now, my mother wasn't prepared to manage on that, quite apart from her desire to be independent. She wanted more money, so the only thing to do was to earn it, which she'd always done. And she continued to do that. And I don't think I've ever said this to anybody before, but I don't think my father was giving my mother any more for housekeeping when he died than he'd done 20 years before. And she never asked for it. She just provided it, you see.
Inside the family as well as another way.
Yes,
yes. That's very interesting. Have you read Hannah Mitchell's book, The Hard Way Up?
Yes.
It's a very interesting description there of family relationships in Lancashire. And her problem, of course, was, in a sense, she couldn't do what your mother did. But again, there's the claims of the man, you know, constantly dragging her down from women's work. She resented, as she said in her autobiography, she resented all this housework all the time she had to do, which was sort of taking her away. Well, your mother obviously had a different way out of that problem.
Yes, a more satisfactory way, I mean, certainly for her.
What about your career, Miss Chu? Did she have views about what you should do?
Well, she was determined that if possible I should go to a university. And there weren't nearly so many openings for girls then, as you know, as there are now. So that teaching was the obvious one. It wasn't something that I sat down to decide on. For one thing, the only way even then that my parents could provide me with university education was for my accepting the grant for intending teachers. You know about that.
It's yes.
Long gone, I'm glad to say. I'd no objection, but I did. I wouldn't say I drifted into it. I accepted it, you see, and I was quite prepared to go in for it. And I enjoyed my training. Later, after about 4 years, which had been quite successful, I began to feel, well, I've never done anything but be at school and college and go back to school. And my mother, I think, always had, not exactly a guilty feeling, but a responsible feeling, that I hadn't had the opportunity to do anything else. And she said, well, you can try helping me in my business, if you like, for a little while. She did need the help. And then you can decide if you want to do anything else. And if you do want to do anything else and want to train for it, I'll pay for it. So I did that. And I certainly convinced myself two things. One was that I was no good at business whatsoever. And the other was that of all the other things I could think of, I preferred teaching. So that I did go back to teaching after a gap of 2 years with the full intention and desire, knowing that it really was what I wanted, you see. And she backed me up in that all the time.
That was very enlightened of her, wasn't it, really, to have that.
It
attitude.
Was.
Especially as she had this, I suppose one might even say, rather exaggerated belief in education because she hadn't had it herself.
Yes.
That's very interesting. One thing I want to ask you about her health, of course, one great source of ill health that a lot of women suffered from at that time, she didn't suffer from because she only had one child. Because, I mean, you must remember, women must have been absolutely bound down in the family with annual children all the time.
Well, you see, my grandmother had 13 children in 16 years, so you needn't be surprised that my mother had only one.
Mm. Did she talk about that, actually, at all? I mean, about the awfulness of...
Yes. And she said she never went out without a baby in her arms. And her mother died in her 50s.
Mm. Did she admire her mother, actually?
She loved her, yes.
Did she?
I don't know whether she admired her.
I wondered whether, I mean, it's a crude explanation, but I wonder whether one dimension of the explanation of her concern for women was simply a concern for her mother and the way in which her mother had been...
No, it was part of it. But... really, I think it wasn't so much a concern. I mean, she had that concern because she felt one with women. But it was a fierce independence in her that led to all this, that she saw all this around her, and she didn't want it either for herself or for anybody else. So she did her best to bring it to an end. And, of course, she loved her mother, and she hated to see her dragged down like that. But I wouldn't say that was the source of it.
No. Was she at all active after the First World War in the various movements for birth control that were quite important at that time?
No.
I mean, quite a lot of suffragists do move on to that, of course, and it's an obvious natural extension, isn't it? I mean, that is a major, or was a major restriction on women's liberty.
You see, for one thing, she hadn't time to be active in anything much.
Yes.
And the only thing that she really did take any interest in was the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
You mentioned that.
An extension of pacifism, you see.
Yes, was that, presumably she's not a pacifist in the Second World War, where she was in the First, because of a hatred of fascism.
Yeah.
I mean, was she at all active in anti-fascist? I suppose she was too old by that time.
No, she didn't. After she retired, she didn't take any part in any public movement at all. I had the feeling she'd had enough, quite frankly.
Yes, well, she'd done her bit, after all.
Not only that, but... Well, perhaps the word disillusionment is wrong, but I know of the feeling of detachment you get when you get older. You see, I was the one who was most violently involved in fascism. I remember anti-fascism.
Yes.
My father remarking once to my mother that they had once said to each other how awful it would be if I wasn't interested in politics, and now he wished to heaven I wasn't. So that I got some backing at home, but my mother did nothing active in that line at all.
But still, she was very strongly anti-Hitler.
Oh, yes, yes. They both were.
It's very surprising if they weren't, really, in view of their background, wouldn't it?
Yes, very.
But getting back to the health thing, I mean, she's not, isn't having these children all the time, but did she have sort of attitudes to how to keep fit sort of thing? I mean, she's not an outgoing, outdoors person,
no.
But she, and presumably her vegetarianism doesn't spring from a desire to keep fit,
no.
It's just dislike of eating animals.
She had no theories on that subject at all.
I see, so she just...
She was too busy to bother.
She just ate to live, sort of thing,
Yes.
Just wondering, because of course, there are quite a lot of vegetarians and so on in the women's movement, and these things tend to go together.
Yes, no, my mother hadn't any propagandist ideas. She never wanted to persuade other people to be vegetarians. It was just a personal attitude, and that was all. Preference.
Yes, did she dislike doctors, for instance? A lot of subjects feel, well, this is the man dominating the woman, so to speak, again.
No.
Did she sort of oppose doctors interfering in her life?
No, you know, she wasn't a woman of anti-man theories.
No.
She would not really have approved of women's lib as such, I think. She was regarded herself as primarily as a person, and she had the rights of any other person. She would object strongly to being dominated by any man, yes.
Because that's another gulf between her and the Pankhursts, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Because
yes.
You know, it's not only anti-militant, she presumably would dislike their anti-man aspects.
Yes, she did,
as well.
Yes.
Did she admire Mrs. Fawcett, actually? Did she talk about her a lot?
I never heard her talk much about her, no. No, I haven't.
Because Mrs. Fawcett was, I suppose, the nearest equivalent in the NEWSS to Mrs. Pankhurst in the NEWSP.
Oh, yes, I know, yes.
But not a sort of magnetic figure like Mrs. Pankhurst.
No, she wasn't, no. No, I don't know what contact my mother had, if any, with Mrs. Fawcett. She knew a good many of the other people. She knew Maud Royden quite well.
Did she? That's interesting. Did she? Maud Royden, I have come across in a number of contexts, among them, actually, I don't know if you've come across, what's his name, the man in Lewes in Sussex who just died, who wrote, knew her very well and was much influenced by her, I can't remember his name, completely forgot. Anyway, he said, how very magnetic she was as
she
a personality,
was, yes.
Spoke beautifully and so on. Kathleen Courtney is another person.
Yes, she was another, yes.
I've mentioned, I think she was at Lady Margaret Hall with Maud Royden, I think I'm right.
Yes, yes.
And was much influenced by her as
She's
well.
Still alive, I believe.
Maud Royden?
No.
Kathleen Courtney?
Kathleen
no, she died about 3-4 months ago.
Oh, did she? That was when David Reed came here. He'd been to see her, I know.
No, I've also been to see her last summer, but I was hoping to go and see her again, but she's died now. Mm. But did your mother, sort of, was she in any sense a disciple of Maud Royden?
No, I wouldn't say she was a disciple of anybody, but she did admire her very much. So did I. I heard her speak a number of times, and I still think she's the most beautiful, but the most beautiful speaker I've ever heard.
It's very interesting. Why actually? I mean, several people have said this to me. I mean, she's one of those figures, you know, who now aren't really known about.
I know. It's odd,
yet,
isn't it?
She had this tremendous influence on a lot of people of that generation, you know, of your generation.
Yes.
Just a very moving way of speaking, is it?
Well, yes. I think it was the intense, not passion, but earnestness. And she had a most beautiful enunciation. It was just like listening to music, to listen to her. She was a beautiful speaker and a very moving one.
And that was why your mother admired her or respected her?
I think so, yes.
Not for her Christianity or anything, because mother wasn't...
No, she was an agnostic.
Religious.
She wasn't that interested in that, no. Mm. No, it was her personality and the way she expressed it.
That's interesting. I do wish I could remember this man's name. It's stupid, isn't it? Forgetting things out, it'll come back to me, but she might possibly have come across him. Another person, presumably, who she would have been very active with would be Dame Margaret Corbett Ashby, who still is alive. They were both in the international women's movement. I know she must have met her.
I can't remember much about her. Mm. One person she knew very well was Margaret Ashton of Manchester.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Mm. Yes. Yes, I've come across her.
And then Mrs. Swanwick, she was an extremely good speaker, too.
Yes, I've read Mrs. Swanwick's autobiography. I Too Have Been Young, I think it's called. Did you ever see her or meet her?
Yes, I have seen her, heard her speak. And when I say she was a very good speaker, I'm giving my own impression, not my mother's.
Mm. You mean
very
your mother?
Forceful, as I remember.
Yes, she was a very intelligent woman, Mrs. Swanwick, I think, but a bit academic.
Say it probably true.
A little heavy.
There's another person my mother knew quite well, was Gertrude Tuckwell.
Oh,
because it was Gertrude Tuckwell who set up the Potteries Fund Committee that my mother worked for so many years. But I remember, now this is quite a long time ago, I can't remember when it was, but I did once meet her and ventured to mention my mother, and she just didn't seem to remember her at all. So I felt rather crushed. And yet mother worked for her for about 30 years. And of course another person that she knew well was, now I'm forgetting names.
Philip Mary is the name I wanted. perhaps you haven't heard his name, but I met him last year. He's died now.
No, I haven't read that.
Mm. Mm-hmm. He was a disciple of Maud Royden's, or very much influenced by him. Sorry, you were saying.
Well, I haven't remembered again. It was the woman who was very well known as the secretary of the Women's Trade, Mary MacArthur.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, one would expect her to.
Yes, well, she visited us once or twice.
You say you said earlier she had quite a lot of people home, is that right?
Well,
I'm not sure whether I'm paraphrasing.
Yes, it was mostly in connection with speakers who came to the town, or who, well, R.H. Tawney came several times, and then there were people like, he's Lord now, what is his name?
Philip Lawrence, no.
No.
Rockway?
Brockway, yes.
Yeah.
When he was playing tenor Brockway.
Yeah.
And a man who I think who died some time ago, Clement Bundock. Mm. And a number of other people who came. When they came as speakers, they didn't come specially. But in that connection.
Mm. So she had a social life, in a sense, around her international interests a bit.
Yes.
Was she at all active in later life, you know, when you were an adult, in local politics at all, local affairs, really?
No.
Mm. I mean, she obviously, her life does really naturally fall into two halves, doesn't it?
It does. And you see, another thing is that both my parents' involvement in local politics was all connected with Rochdale. Well, in the early 20s, they both moved to Manchester and were both far too busy to start afresh, even if they'd wished to, which I don't think they did.
So that broke, another thing, breaking the connections of the earlier life.
Yes, it falls definitely into two parts.
Yeah. What, could you just explain to me what she did with this mail order business? She conducted all the correspondence, did she?
She did everything,
home,
yes.
Really?
Yes. Well, she had a warehouse, a small warehouse in Salford, and she produced the mail order catalogues herself and conducted all the correspondence. She learnt double bookkeeping and did that, and sent off all the parcels. I think she had one assistant. It was really quite a heavy physical job.
I see. So
very demanding.
One man thing, in a one woman thing, in a way.
Yes, it was. Yes.
So did she travel at all to these various people?
No, it was all done by correspondence.
Yes, that's true.
And the buying was done in Manchester warehouses.
She went round the warehouses.
Yes.
Did she?
Yes. And nearly all her customers were little one-woman shops in villages, you see.
She wasn't interested in that aspect of it particularly, was she? I mean, helping these women in the...
No, it was a commercial proposition.
Yes.
She became interested in them as individuals, when she corresponded with them. But there was nothing social about it, oh no.
No.
No, and you know, quite honestly, throughout the whole of her life, my mother's attitude to everything she did was very practical. She was an idealist, but she was a very practical idealist. She didn't set out to help anybody, except insofar as they wanted to help themselves. And it was all part of helping herself. It was a job. But when she wrote about these women, you can tell she felt very strongly about them and the lives they lived. But she didn't write the articles simply to help them, because it didn't help them really, you see, at all. It was more to express her own feelings about it.
And a belief in independence as such.
Yes.
Everybody, including herself.
Yes. I should say, looking back, I think that was probably the moving factor in her life.
And really belief in dignity of individuals.
Yes.
That's interesting. Did you say you had help in the house? I mean, this was presumably to enable her to do this business and so on. What was this, a housekeeper or...?
No, just, in early days I remember a woman who came in and did the washing, you see. Because doing the washing was a real chore in those days. Took all Monday.
Yeah.
And then we had... a girl who came in every day, you see, and later, when she was going away and suffrage, you know, by-elections for a week or two at a time. And when she was at home, she was busy organising in Rossendale.
Was she good with these girls, I mean, who worked for her in the house? I mean, did she develop a good relationship with them at all, do you remember? I mean, I suppose it's a rather small aspect of her life, but it is one woman employing another, isn't it, in a way?
Oh, it was a practical relationship, yes.
It's one of the major differences between households now and then is that, you know, in those days, one's house wasn't one's own, really, in a way. I mean, you always had these... employees around.
Well, I must admit, that was one thing my mother didn't care for. She would much have preferred to have it to herself. It was a matter of having to employ somebody.
Yes. To make yourself free to do these other things.
She would much have preferred all the gadgets we have now and to do it yourself.
To be independent.
Yes.
That's interesting.
She said she didn't like another woman going round and... rearranging.
Like anybody, woman or man.
No, I know, but it's always a woman, isn't it?
Yes, well, that's also true.
It wasn't because it was a woman, it was another person.
Yes, that's also true. But would you say that she was a woman? I mean, it seems to be a rather remarkable thing, suddenly doing this mail order thing, sort of late-ish in life. Was she a woman who was always learning throughout her life, always... acquiring new skills, new knowledge.
Yes, I should say she was, yes.
Yes.
And she had so much initiative, you see, all through her working life. She was always trying something new. Not because it was new, but because it was there to be done. It was a way of not only expressing yourself and your views, but earning money, which was very important.
Was the core. Yes. She retired, you say, in 1930, was that so, something like that? So, what age would she be then?
60.
Yes. So, how did that alter the pattern of her life, would you say? Retirement?
Well, it altered it so that for as long as she could, she had no help in the house. But she had eventually to agree to have some. Mm. And that she was able to travel and to read as much as she liked. But of course the war interrupted it very sadly. Mm. I've always been sorry that she had to die. I mean, apart from my own feelings, when the war was barely over, because she used to say, oh, if only I could see my own country again, if only I could get around at all. And she had rather bad arthritis in one leg by that time, and we'd sold the car when we couldn't get petrol, so that she really was very much confined to home.
And she felt restless.
Yes, she did. I think she was very deprived in those years.
Of course, in 1940, your father died, didn't he? So she was, is that right? Have I got the dates right?
Yes.
So she was on her own, apart from you. So in a way, your life together goes in a circle, isn't it?
Yes.
You were very much with her as a young woman, a young girl, weren't
yes.
you? And then at the very end, I suppose,
yes.
you were very much
yes.
with her, were you? Because you both lived in this house
yes.
together, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes. So she, how did she stick Winston Churchill, for instance, during the Second World War? I mean, how did she stick him? I mean, because he had been so hostile to the women's movement, of course, in the Edwardian period. I wondered if that at all jarred on her when he was making his great speeches and so on.
No. No, she took him in the other aspect, you see, and didn't hold it against him.
Yes, I see. Because some women did. I came across the daughter of Dorothy Evans, who was a prominent suffragette, actually, the other day, and her mother had no time. She was a pacifist, like your mother, but extended into the Second World War as well as the First, and had no time for Winston Churchill. She just remembered him as Home Secretary.
No, my mother's attitude to him changed with her attitude to the war, you see, and her general attitude to fascism.
What about communism?
Well, she'd no use for that.
Mm. Never?
No, I don't think ever. Mm. She'd never tempted to flirt with it. Mm. And I can't remember her ever.
She's too practical, really, isn't she? I mean,
well,
that's one of the problems about
yes.
communism for her.
Yes.
I suppose.
I don't think she... She was never very vehement about it, but she just didn't care for
wasn't
it.
Wasn't interested, yes. Mm. Do you think, do you get the impression she became, I mean, she obviously became disillusioned with the labour movement as something herself to participate in, but did she become very critical of the trade unions, for instance, later in life?
No.
Mm. I mean, the general strike, for instance.
Oh, no, she was all for the general strike.
Was she?
Oh, yes.
Was she?
Yes. No, it never... It was more a disillusionment with Labour people rather than with Labour ideals. Mm. She was very thrilled when, in 1945, when Clement Attlee got in with a very big majority. I remember her saying, well, I think the country will be all right now. I'm not sure about the world.
That's interesting.
Oh, no, she never lost her general sympathy with the Labour movement. It was more disillusionment with the individuals who composed it, or some of them.
Yes. Was she actually in the Peace Pledge Union in the 30s? You know, the main pacifist organisation? I don't...
No. No. No, she never... I don't think she... She wasn't very doctrinaire, you know.
Mm.
And it was more a sort of general idealism rather than a particular association with a particular group of people and a particular method of doing anything. And she was never extreme, except in her hatred of injustice, I think.
What about her relatives and your relatives? Did she have a strong sort of family connection, really, and visit among them and that sort of thing?
Yes, she did. Once her mother had died, I think she was the main holding force in the family. She always felt a strong sense of responsibility for her brothers, particularly those whom she'd helped to bring up. I don't think they always appreciated it, but I'm quite sure that she felt it.
So they would come to her when they were in trouble or something, would they? Or she'd conduct correspondence with them?
She conducted correspondence, and she had them to stay, and then later, when I was able to take her around, we went and visited them. We visited them before, but more frequently, you see, then. Oh, yes, she did the same thing for my father's family, too. I think he'd have let it go altogether, but she kept it together. Kept up relationships with it, with the members of it.
Yes, that's that. I mean, with that and the business, and keeping the house up, and
yes,
doing her reading, she must have been pretty busy, I thought.
She was an extremely busy woman until she retired.
Yes.
I never remember her being... Well, she never did nothing except when she was reading.
Was she fond of music or theatre or anything like that?
Theatre, yes. And, you know, in those days we were luckier, really, than young people are today. In the provinces, in the regions, as I should say, because every town had its theatre and there were a great many travelling companies, Shakespearean companies and companies performing Shaw, the small opera companies. And my parents used to go and used to take me with them, of course. Well, they couldn't leave me at home anyway. And there were no babysitters in those days. And we went quite regularly to all these things.
Did you?
And sometimes to Manchester too, later on. Yes, they weren't really musical people. They'd no musical, not merely no musical education, but no real musical bent, except in the popular way. But they enjoyed light opera, and they very much enjoyed theatre.
When you say light opera, would you, I mean, what sort of sense of humour did your mother have, really, would you say?
Do you know, that's the most difficult question you've asked me. I don't know.
And was it a sense of ridiculous, really? I mean, was she keen on Gilbert and Sullivan, for instance? Was it that type of humour?
Well, yes. She liked Gilbert and Sullivan, but she also liked Jane Austen. That answers.
Did she? I see.
An ironical sense of humour, yes.
Yes, I see. Because irony doesn't... Well, it would fit really in this way, that irony tends to go with disillusion, doesn't it, to some extent? I mean, people who are very strongly idealistic aren't ironic.
Oh, that doesn't stop you from enjoying those who are. I mean, after all, surely you wouldn't say that you have to be disillusioned to enjoy Jane Austen. Perhaps you don't like her much.
I don't, actually, no.
Well, I love her and always have.
Do you really?
But
yes.
I think I have another sense of humour as well, and I think my mother had.
But
she wouldn't enjoy farce.
She, yes, I see, yes. And would she laugh a lot, for instance? Did you often hear her laughing? Or was it a more subtle sort of quiet humour that she really had?
Yes, she did laugh. And she, both with her brothers and with me when I was small, she could be very annoying, she could be very teasing. She had that sort of sense of humour too.
She'd banter with people.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think she would have been a good teacher, actually?
Well, she tried it once and said she was awful, but I don't know. I don't know. I think she would in some ways, yes, very good.
I mean, she wouldn't be unkind to children.
Oh, never,
at
no.
all.
No.
And presumably she'd be able to convey an infectious enthusiasm.
Yes, I'm sure she would have done, yes.
Yes, yes. On the other hand, would you say she was a person who liked being surrounded by young people? I mean,
no, not particularly. I think she'd had too much of it when she was a child. Mm. She, like many people as they grow old, she became attracted to the young, to young children particularly. But all through her life, no. I don't think... She was not a maternal woman. Mm. Not in the sense, you know, when they say some people are born mothers and so on. She was the best mother I ever had. Mm. And she was certainly very good to her little brothers. But she was not the sort of woman who would choose to look after children as her life was.
I understand, yes. Mm. Fair enough. In fact, her whole life is, in a sense, creating other roles for women apart from being mothers, isn't it?
Yes, yes,
to some extent, yes. One thing I did want to ask you about her speaking, I mean, you must have seen her speaking in public a bit, I suppose, but rather earlier on in your life than later, I suppose. At least as a child rather than as a young woman.
Yes, quite.
But was she a sort of eloquent speaker, really, would you say?
She was very eloquent. And she never really halted for a word. But she never used a note. She used to say she couldn't use a note. Mm. It just all came out, you see. And she was an extremely good and fluent extempore speaker. The kind that can grip a crowd, because she spoke emotionally and what she believed in very strongly, you see. It came across.
With gestures or imitations or mimicry or what? I
mean, no, not a great many gestures.
Because Christabel Pankhurst, of course, used to specialise in imitating the absurdities of her opponents and so on.
Yes, yes.
But that wouldn't quite fit with your mother, would it?
No.
Yes. Of course, you didn't presumably speak in public really at all after about 1920 or so, did you?
Well, not really, after 1914.
Mm. Mm.
She did a bit of local public work in the early years of the war in Rochdale, but it was mostly a case of going with committees to the town hall, well, with local associations to the town hall to get health committees set up and so on.
I understand.
Yeah. She did no public work. And I can't remember, I don't think she ever spoke in public after the war. See, well, she hadn't time for one thing, and she wasn't involved with anything which would have necessitated it.
Yes. Do you think she was personally generous? I mean, did she give money away easily to people, to causes, to individuals, privately or publicly? I mean, did you feel that was an important side of her?
No, I don't think money had ever been plentiful enough for that.
No.
What she gave was work and herself.
Yes, yes, well that's enough, isn't it?
Mm.
Yes. But obviously there is a certain type of person who just... Of course, in a sense, I suppose her practicality and her belief in independence goes rather against just giving people handouts, doesn't it, all the time?
Yes, I remember I joined the local Council for Social Service, and she didn't like it because she had the idea that it was one of these charities that handed out money to people, and she'd always had a resentment against anything like that. Lady of the Manor complex.
Oh, of course, yes. but not a resentment against the idea of the welfare state.
Oh no, well that was different.
Different sort of thing.
Yes.
Yes.
It was private charity she disliked the thought of.
I understand, yes. Of course, the local Council of Women's Service and so on, that's all linked up, really, isn't it? Social Service is linked up with the old charity organisations.
Well, it isn't really, you know. It doesn't give money away. I mean, its main job is running the Citizens Advice Bureau, and there's no charitable element in that.
Mm. No, I'm just looking historically at the genealogy of it.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that's where it originated.
Yes,
isn't it?
It didn't in Burnley, actually.
Didn't it?
No, in Burnley it came out of the attempt in the 30s to set up clubs for the unemployed young people. And it had no connection with any other charity, no. But I don't think Mother realised that.
Yes, yes. Because one would certainly expect somebody active in the Labour Party in its very early days to be hostile to anything connected with the COS.
Yes, she was.
I must switch off because I don't know whether there's anything else, any other aspect of her life which you think one ought to talk about.
I don't know, I think I've covered most of it. There's just one thing, perhaps, and more in her relationship to me. She never tried to push me into any of her activities. As you know, one grows up naturally formed by one's parents' attitude. I think you either accept it or you rebel against it. And a great deal depends on the way it's introduced to you. And in my case, it was never pushed on me. Therefore, I largely accepted it. And in later life, in my middle years, I did become, well, first in the 20s, when I was in Manchester, and then later, I did become very much involved in my own way in international affairs, and later on in local public affairs. And my mother's attitude to that was always, she was always glad, you see. She didn't want to push me into anything like that. But she accepted it and encouraged it all the time. But it had to be my way of doing it. She wasn't in any way trying to force me into anything that she had done or that she would have done in my position.
She wanted you to be independent as she had been.
Yes.
Well, it's very wise, isn't it?
Yes.
One's come across several suffragist or et daughters who reacted very strongly against their parents' views and really, in a sense, shed their parents altogether, and that's all sad.
Yes, well, I think it is must be almost entirely due to the way the parents have dealt with them in the first instance.
Mm.
If you try to force somebody into a definite line, they will rebel against you, won't they?
Of course, yes, yes.
And therefore I have, in my own more limited sphere, been perhaps as active as my mother in a number of different directions. But they've been my directions, you see.
Of course, yes. Mm. Yes. So your general memory of her is a very happy one.
A very happy one indeed.
Mm. Mm. Mm-hmm. Did she, towards the end of her life, I don't know what she died of. It was really old age, was it?
Well, her heart gave way, yes.
Yes.
And she was. I'd thought she'd live on to the 80s, but I think probably the hard life she'd lived had taken its toll, because it was just a case of the doctor warned her heart was weakening. And it just stopped, you see. That was all.
But you say she had arthritis, bad arthritis towards
yes.
the end of her life.
Yes, well, many, many of us old people get that. Yes.
Mm. Mm. It's usually, or quite often, associated with longevity, actually, isn't it? I mean,
well, yes, you live long enough to get it, don't you?
Well, precisely, yes, yes.
It's not a present accompaniment.
Yes. Was she impatient with her arthritis?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Just stopped getting around.
She was an impatient person.
Mm.
I don't know whether I've conveyed that properly, but she was very impatient. Impatient with things which held her back, and impatient with injustice and the things that were wrong in society and so on.
Rather like Hannah Mitchell in that way.
Yes.
Not impatient with people, do you think?
No. Well, she could be, but she wouldn't. Yes, I think perhaps that was one of the reasons for her disillusionment with the Labour Party. She became impatient with some of them. Yes, I think she could be.
Mm.
But on the whole, she was tolerant. She had that element in her, are you quite right, of impatience with. I don't think she suffered fools very gladly.
Mm. Mm. But not irritable or bad tempered.
Oh no.
Only when there's a principle involved or
yes.
some sort of
yes.
ideal
yes.
or something like
yes.
that. Yes.
And anyway, I said she was reserved. A better name word might have been solitary.
Mm.
She was quite a solitary person.
But of course, her arthritis would prevent her moving around, which was a sort of life to her, I suppose, wasn't it? Just seeing people, seeing different places.
Yes, yes.
Most galling, in a way, to be stuck like that. Did she listen to the radio very much, actually?
Did she?
Did she listen to the wireless very much?
Oh, yes, because there was no TV then. Yes, she did listen to the wireless. I don't know how much... See, so much of the time, the last few years, I was out.
Yes. And things like the Brains Trust, for instance.
Yes, she liked that sort of thing, yes.
Yes, I would have thought she would.
Yes, she did.
Yes. Yes. Mm. Yes. That really is a tremendous...